Now, you know, if you follow me on Twitter, I'm all out there talking about immigration, Brown Consultants Matter, or announcing some new Latino candidate. When I started organizing with the Steelworkers Union back in the early 90s, I was knocking on doors, registering folks to vote, explaining to folks why they should vote for this candidate or that one. Back in the day, you didn't have Twitter or social media like Facebook or Snapchat, and if you couldn't reach somebody in person or on their landline, that was it. But now, you can connect with people in so many more ways. Heck, the president has a Twitter account, you can attend a local town hall meeting online, or you even can play a game like Twitch with your local senator.
I can completely clear AOP off all
Toast that was with yeah. me the whole time, but whole time. Am I being marinated? Is that
I don't see. And young people are the driving force behind all of it. They're using technologies to have fun and connect with their friends, of course, but don't be fooled, because they're very intentional about how they're using it. As you've seen with Black Lives Matter or the Arab Spring, young people are using technologies to organize and mobilize with issues that are much bigger than themselves. They're connecting to young people in other towns, across the country, and sometimes even across other countries. And that's definitely the case for today's guest, Grace Martinez Rosas. Grace is a Mexican immigrant rights activist and the executive director of United We Dream, the nation's largest youth-led network in the country. And you better believe they're using social media to speak out against deportations, educating folks on DACA, and to share COVID-19 resources for immigrant communities. But I also love talking to Grace about her family's journey from Mexico, our shared love of Texas football and Whataburger, and why she's so damn proud to be undocumented and unafraid. You're going to really like this one. Enjoy. Grace, I was going through things and learned so much about you in the last week, and I found out that you're from Hidalgo, Mexico, and that you came to the U.S. I knew you had came as a young person, but I didn't realize you had moved to Dallas, Texas, just down the street from where I was raised in Tyler, Texas, but we'll get to that. Tell me what young Grace was like and what you remember about Mexico.
Young Grace was really shy. I was the daughter of Southern Baptist preachers in Dallas, Texas. What I would describe myself as someone that remembers exactly what it felt like to cross the Rio Grande waters with my mom and my dad holding my hands, how scary and cold that was, but also how, you know, committed I think and how my parents were in creating a different life for us. And so that's who I was. I was just trying to do right by my parents and trying to like stay out of trouble.
The immigrant experience is so unique for all of us. And I've learned so much with the young dreamers and immigrants who work with me in my firm. And this is a question I like to know is that, you know, you're around friends growing up in Mexico, your family's in Mexico. So how was it adjusting to your new life in Texas?
I always known that I was undocumented. So to be honest, like my main goal in life was make sure that people don't see you, like just do what you need to do, but go to school. And, you know, the beautiful thing about Oak Cliff is that it's full of Mexican immigrants. And so I think what I remember is just this spirit of finding your tribe, finding your crew of people that knew exactly what it was like to live undocumented, to try to just be in the hustle, a community that really embraced us. But to be honest, also a lot of racism. I know what it feels like to have the eyes of folks that don't believe that my father or I should be in this country. I could feel it on my skin sometimes. And I remember what it feels like to not feel welcome, but to be seen as other. And so I remember a lot of good times and like feeling like we found community and a lot of things that we had to protect ourselves from.
How long do you think you were in South Oak Cliff, which I love? How do you think you were before you discovered Whataburger? That's what I really want to know.
You know, Whataburger was the hallmark of my college days when I was at Texas A&M.
And for those of you listening who don't know about this Tex-Mex stuff we're talking about, Whataburger is a regional chain of hamburgers that if you live anywhere in rural Texas, sometimes it's the only restaurant, and it is greasy and it is good and it's covered in salt and it's the best hamburger you can ever have. But as you go to school in South Oak Cliff, which by the way has turned out some of the best athletes in the world in South Oak Cliff, tell me about high school. What's high school like? Are there other undocumented children around you that are your friends? Are you just accepted like others? What was the high school experience, which is hard enough on all of us, but here you are, this undocumented young activist. Tell me about activist young high school sweetheart, Grace.
I don't know how it was growing up in your household, Chuck, but for mine, my parents only knew that I could either be a doctor or a lawyer. So like the path is like pick one of the two and like figure out how you get there. So, so I remember since I was like in middle school, like my goal was to be a doctor. And so I went actually to at Townview, which is a healthcare magnet. It was like a place where you were supposed to be like prepared to go on to medical school in the future. And I think what one of the things that I remember or like is like really in my mind was how everybody was looking forward to these internships that we were going to have on sophomore year. Like we're going to go to a hospital, we're going to go get to shadow doctors and learn more about it. And I had been hyping myself up for this, like in freshman year, getting like the grades, like doing all that I needed to do. And then when I finally get there, like they give you this form. And at the end of the day, I couldn't go because I didn't have a social security number. And how devastated I felt and how ashamed I felt not being able to tell my friends why I couldn't go. And I just, you know, I had to make up this lie saying like, oh yeah, I don't want to do that anymore. When like everything inside of me was like, oh man, like I can't believe I don't get to have this experience because of this thing that I've known has always followed me since I was in elementary school. I've known that I was undocumented. So I think that that experience plus seeing the way that my parents were treated when as we were navigating life and trying to survive in Dallas is what sort of like shifted my place of like hopelessness and just keep your head down to like, forget this. Like I need to do something about it because life cannot be like this. I've worked, my parents have worked too hard. They've sacrificed too much. And I remember we had just seen the Sensenbrenner bill, which is an anti-immigrant bill that passed the House of Representatives in 2006.
That the House of Representatives is going to pass one of the most controversial bills on immigration restriction since the racist 1924 Immigration Quota Act. And it will be known as the Sensenbrenner bill. On December 16, 2005, the Border Protection, Anti-Terrorism, and Illegal Immigration Control Act of 2005, known as H.R. 4437, passed the House of Representatives by a vote of 239 to 182. This legislation, sponsored by the Judiciary Chairman James Sensenbrenner, a Republican from Wisconsin, and Homeland Security Chairman Peter King, a Republican from New York.
We swept the nation with the news of undocumented people feeling really scared that this law had passed in here in Washington, D.C. And I remember watching the TV with my dad on Sunday night after coming home from church and having to explain to him that there was this guy named Sensenbrenner that had said that we needed to be deported and anyone that who would help us should also be deported. And that night, I just felt like that plus the injustice of not being able to pursue my dreams, plus seeing my parents struggle so much and work so hard and yet not be able to feel safe as they were driving to work is what led me to lead my first high school walkout. I remember like seeing like students from California come out and like walk out of school. And like, I was like, well, why can't we do that here? And so my friend Gustavo and I like organized, we passed out pamphlets and we said like, let's do it. And I just remember feeling so powerful.
You know, that was such the beginning point of activist Graysa in my mind. Do you still stay in touch with any of those same people who walked out with you the very first time?
Yeah, so I was talking about my friend Blanca Castillo, who walked out with me and many others. And now it's such an honor to see her be a nurse in one of the hospitals in Dallas, Texas. And it's so important because she was also undocumented. And because of DACA and the fight of immigrant young people, she and I get to be able to have a small taste of what it would mean to win citizenship for millions of undocumented folks.
I grew up an hour and a half east of Graysa in rural East Texas. Tyler was the nearest town. Well, just south of me and southeast of Graysa is one of the most conservative colleges in America, which is Texas A&M. And growing up, all the Democrats and the liberals went to the University of Texas and all the white Republican conservatives went to A&M. And when I read you went there, I had no idea. So while at A&M, people, she starts the Council for Non-Minority Student Affairs. You start being active on this. What's it like to be this undocumented and unafraid immigrant activist on one of the most conservative campuses in America?
The reason why I decided to go to A&M were two. My number one is that they had a good football team and I needed some college football in my life. And the second thing is that they gave me a full ride scholarship. And I was like, all right, this is the place that I go. So I remember coming to the campus and, like, you know, it's like this vision of like what you see on TV, like this like beautiful campus and people want to go to like football games. And I thought, I just need to make it to college and everything's going to be okay. But that wasn't my reality. I came to know very well what it was like to be undocumented, what it was like to be a Latina, what it was like to be someone that didn't feel like they belonged in that campus. One of our classmates, Jose Luis, was coming out of a library late at night, and some guys put a black plastic bag over his head, turn him around, and they said, go back to Mexico, you wetback. And he, you know, we had created a small like support group of ourselves. We'd found each other over the first year of our college experience. And he came to us crying and like feeling like, what did I do? I just was coming out of studying. And it led to us feeling like not welcomed, to feeling targeted. And it led to also us feeling like this fire in our bellies that we needed to say something, that we couldn't just allow that to go unheard. And so I remember we organized after that, like our first rally in the campus, where we had like undocumented people and our supporters go around the campus and the quad and all of the places saying that immigrants were welcomed in that space. And you know, what happened was that then the folks, the conservative folks that were there, were relentless. They actually moved to call for Texas A&M to publicly denounce undocumented people being students at the university, and wanted to pass these resolutions and these laws that would say that we weren't welcomed. And, you know, like, it's just what we needed to make sure that we organized ourselves. And from a group of like 10 folks, we grew to like hundreds of people joining us in actions.
We're all joining together and we're going to have our voices heard. We will no longer be quiet. We will no longer be
a lot of those folks that, you know, we cut our teeth in campaigning and political strategy there. We were able to run one of the first undocumented people for student body presidents into the school. And we elected senators into the student government. And it was, you know, I think is where I got the sazon, or the little taste for what political strategy was like, why you need to build momentum when the opposition comes up and attacks you. How do you run a narrative campaign that puts your issue in the light that more people can join you? But I'll never forget the tears of my friend, Jose Luis, and the pain that I saw in his eyes of being so viciously attacked. And unfortunately, this energy that I thought was contained in that really conservative campus has taken our country by storm. We have seen it take hold of the White House and our Senate and the Congress and the Texas Capitol and itself. And so I think that my time in A&M was painful, but it was also triumphant, and it also helped shape me.
Well, I think that it also reinforces what we're trying to do today, is tell these stories. And I think your story empowers so many others not to be afraid and to know what's possible. And I think one of the reasons it's possible is this next question, that social media has been such a big part of what you've built, what you've seen, the Arab Spring, Black Lives Matter, which is a very different organizing tool when I was a kid. I'm at least 20 years older than you. We were calling people on landlines when I was organizing and knocking on their doors. There was no internet. How do you see empowering the internet and how that's changed organizing in the work that you're doing in connecting undocumented folks to be unafraid?
The internet was one of the ways in which we first found each other as undocumented young people in the beginning of our movement. I remember hearing stories of people coming out as undocumented and unafraid in these YouTube videos that would like share their stories. And at first I thought that it was like this like random phenomenon that someone like had just started organically. And it wasn't until years later that when I came into the leadership of United We Dream that I found out that it was actually a campaign that they started to be able to have people have these coming out stories of being undocumented and what it meant and like what our connections were. So digital organizing and digital engagement, using these tools to expand our narrative and connect us in places that where we thought we were alone, has been at the core of the start of United We Dream. And now in this moment that we find ourselves in, it is a frontier in which our fights are won and are lost. I think that in this last cycle, we have seen the mis and disinformation that has been perpetuated all across, and the specific targeting of young Latino males in our community by mis and disinformation from the opposition. And it's also created such a powerful tool for organizing. A lot of like what we saw as the response to the defense of Black lives in the last Juneteenth of 2020 was because of the leadership and thought and like futurist strategy that the folks from the Movement for Black Lives had of creating digital spaces where people can be in community. And that's what we do at United We Dream every day with the million members. We have 6 million folks that have a connection with us every month. Using our digital platforms, we have people all across the country and the world really connected to this vision that we're doing. And to be honest, it like helps us cross borders even when our bodies aren't able to travel. So one of the cool examples of that is that based on our digital organizing, we were able to be connected to undocumented young people in Ireland who have taken up the banner of Undocumented and Unafraid as they've launched their own campaigns to ensure that they are able to be welcomed and belong in Ireland. Because we know that migration is a global issue, that undocumented status is not only here in the United States, but everywhere. Technology, innovation, being able to take big risk, those things that define the immigrant experience are exactly what we need as we think about the expansion of the digital plane in which we are fighting all of these fights.
You are in the top leadership of United We Dream. You are looked at as somebody who is in the forefront of advocating immigration policy for millions of people who need a voice. Tell me about the journey to United We Dream.
Yeah, so I'm really honored to serve as the executive director. I'll say that I'm accountable to a base of undocumented young people from all across the country. For me, I am the embodiment of this idea that we have at United We Dream, that those closest to the pain, those people that, as the civil rights leader taught me, that they feel it in their bones, those are the people that are closest to the solutions, the innovations, and the breakthroughs. And that's my story. I was very undocumented, very afraid, very queer, very in the closet in South Oak Cliff, Dallas, Texas. And I had just had these set of experiences, right, of like the walkout of college attacks that were happening on undocumented people. And all of a sudden, I get this invitation by Julieta Garibay and her sister. And they say, hey, Graysa, we've seen what you've been doing here in Texas. You want to go out for dinner? And I was like, cool, free meal, college student, I'll take it. And as we were in the conversation, they told me about this national network that they had just launched to fight for the DREAM Act. And I thought, okay, cool. Like, there's this bill, like it would benefit me if we just pass it. And we go to Washington, D.C., the senators will surely get that this is a thing we need to pass. I'll go do that, come back to A&M, like finish my degree, and then like go be a doctor and like my life will be like better. And that was not what happened. But they recruited me. They said, bring a bus to Washington, D.C. in December of 2010, because we're going to have a big fight for the DREAM Act. And I did it. Like me and my friends, Adrian Reina, Julieta Garibay, and many others, we filled up this like yellow school bus with a bunch of like brown and black kids coming up from Dallas to DC in the midst of like a winter that Texans had never seen or experienced. All of us were ill prepared for the bitter cold of Washington, DC at that time. And I remember it was my first time lobbying in D.C. It was my first time seeing direct actions. We had seen faith leaders like clamoring for protection for our undocumented folks. And I remember being in the Senate gallery when the vote for the DREAM Act was cast. And I thought, for sure, we told them my stories, we cried, we sang. I remember Gabby Pacheco made up these like Christmas jingle bells for the DREAM Act. We had sang at them, we had chanted at them. And I was like, surely, like that's all I needed to do to tell them that we needed something to change. But Chuck, we lost by 5 votes.
This bill is a law that at its fundamental core is a reward for illegal activity.
For me, that was like my first interaction with like things don't really work like Schoolhouse Rock tells you that they work. There's a lot more that goes along to it. And it set me in a pathway of then becoming an organizer with United We Dream and feeling like really committed to delivering this thing. And I was really lucky to have mentors around me that poured into me, women, undocumented women, Black and brown women that saw something in me that I didn't see myself, that set me on this course of accepting leadership. And in the way that I think about leadership and the way that I was trained as an organizer is that leadership is taking responsibility for enabling others to achieve purpose in the face of uncertainty. And that's what I hope to do every single day here at United We Dream.
It's hard to think, and I don't know if you think like I think, but that was over 11 years ago now. It's 2021. You're now leading this organization, which is the largest youth-led network of undocumented people in the country. And what you just said was so eloquent of making sure that we are not the last generation to lift up Black and brown voices, that there are organizations and leaders like us. What do you do 11 years later after you were on that little bus experiencing this cold to make sure you stay connected to young Gresa, who's on a college campus, undocumented, who's been disappointed and happy about DACA? Am I going to get renewed? Like, what keeps you connected to that group of folks 11 years later? Who were you 12 years ago?
Well, the beauty of United We Dream is that my charge is to ensure that the generations after me have a space to be able to be transformed as just as I have been at United We Dream through movement and through my organizing and through the fight to win DACA and the fight to defend DACA and the fight for the Dream Act every single year. I've been able to really embrace that I am undocumented and unafraid and queer and unashamed. And the practice, I think, that we have at United We Dream of pouring into other young people, of ensuring that we're doing grassroots organizing and base building, that it's not just about the clicks and the likes and the email list, but it's really about relationships and accountability to one another. That's the way that I stay connected to that part of myself, because unfortunately, the same racism, the same lack of opportunity, the same systemic barriers for undocumented Latinos and Black folks exist today, just as they did 10 years ago, even more so pronounced. And so when I hear the stories of the young 16, 18-year-olds that are now members of United We Dream that know exactly what I mean and how it feels when I say that this gut feeling that you get when the police is like driving behind you, that like happens every single day. And so part of what keeps me grounded and what keeps me connected to that place is also my joy. Like, I fiercely believe in the discipline of hope that my parents taught me, that though things may be unseen, maybe that I have faith in our movement, I have faith in our partners, I have faith in our power, that we're going to win. And it's just a matter of time. So you got to keep going.
Oh, those are such good words. And I think such good advice. I think about the activism that you talk about. I think the protests that you've been at, the sit-ins that you've been part of, you know, as activists, sisters and brothers, generations apart, right? So I was on picket lines and hit with bats and had my interactions with police and been afraid like you've been unafraid. But in this year, after we've lived through Donald Trump and literally been danger for our lives, especially a woman, queer, undocumented, tell me what you're doing to take care of you. And then what advice you give to other young folks in this movement or any folks. I'm an old folks and I want to take care of me too. But what are you doing to give people and take care of yourself in these times?
I mean, I'm really grounded in like in Black feminist theory when they say that to take care of yourself, to tend to your mental health, to tend to your body is part of a political revolution. In order for you to be able to be present, like your body and your mind have to also be present in this work. And so, to be honest, I struggle with this, just like everybody else, about what does it mean to have this level of responsibility that millions of undocumented people are still out in like the Pacific Northwest picking crops in like horrendous like climate change conditions, that we are seeing detentions double under the Biden administration, that we are seeing the growth of the budget of ICE and CBP. I can be honest with you as friends that sometimes that feels really heavy. But the only reason why, or one of the many reasons why I'm still here, is because of the crew, because of the squad around me, because I am part of community, because the staff and the membership of United We Dream are like the smartest, sharpest, most loving people that this country has seen. That I have people like you, Chuck, people like the Latinati crew that like are surrounding me, people that are conspiring for my favor and check in on me. And that is part of the way in which I show up for others and others show up for me, as well as like my faith. As I shared with you, I'm the daughter of Southern Baptist preachers. And this idea that like faith is evidence of things unseen, that you can imagine a different future and a different outcome. And in this moment right now, I know that my work will be necessary, but it will not be sufficient. That my job is to ensure that I'm laying the groundwork for the people that are to come so that they can take the work moving forward and not feeling like I have to solve everything right here, right now, but that I can do my best right now, that I can ask the right questions right now, and that I will experience and have already experienced a lot of sexism and ageism and homophobia in my role as executive director and a queer woman in this space. And oftentimes one of the youngest in the space. And I am grounded that this work is my offering and my contribution to the work of generations of Chicanos that have laid the groundwork for me, the work of like queer folks that joined ACT UP in New York and before, the work of Black civil rights leaders that laid the groundwork for like a representative democracy that I represent. And I'm not alone in doing that.
That is awesome. And I think that the way you talk about faith and you talk about community is exactly why we created Nuestro Pod. Something you probably don't know, that growing up in East Texas, I was a Southern Baptist as well and spent a lot of time in the Baptist church. I was saved in a place called Dixie Baptist Church and got baptized at Pleasant Hill. You don't forget those things as a kid when you're dunked in water. The other connection we have is the way that we talk about our community. You know, of course, that the podcast is called Nuestro, and our goal is to bring Latino people together as a community. So what does Nuestro mean to you?
I actually think that the pandemic, the confluence of the pandemic, of Donald Trump, of the climate change that we are currently experiencing, I think has redefined and broadened the us and the we for me. My vision is to ensure that we are breaking through and across the silos that unfortunately I believe white supremacy have like put us into and have sometimes like prevented us from being in community with other folks that have the same dreams and aspirations and deserve the same thing. Everybody wants a good, fair wage. Everybody wants to be able to have access to the doctor when they're sick. My people are those folks that understand that our visions and our futures are intertwined, and that to be able to move in community is an important value. My people are queer people and people that like are reject boundaries and binaries. And my people are like Latinos that love to dance and love salsa verde y salsa roja. My people are people that love Whataburger and In-N-Out and Crystals. Yes, I just feel like, but the clarity that I have found through the work and a lot of learning, and I'm still learning, is that we need multiracial democracy that truly belongs to the people, that is putting power back into Black and Brown communities, that is ensuring that we are showing up in defense for Black lives, and are also able to talk about the ways in which policing and militarism is showing up in our communities and how that has been the way in which we have been oppressed for so long, and we're saying no more. And so my people build independent political power because we know that we have always been powerful, no matter what anyone says.
Well, that's the perfect answer. And that's why we want to do these interviews. I think you're a pure example of what is possible. What is possible when you put your mind to something, but to create a space, as my papa would say, to plow a really wide path so lots of seeds can be put in that path. What's next for United We Dream? What's next for you? What's next in this movement?
Well, I mean, I definitely see us winning citizenship in this year. I do think that, and I actually wonder what your analysis is on this, Chuck, is that citizenship is not enough. It doesn't protect you from hunger. It doesn't protect you from employers that like would want to take advantage of you. And so citizenship is important. Like why I got into this, I need citizenship because I'm still undocumented and like I'm still subject to deportation. But I see the work of United We Dream and being able to grow the largest base and mobilization apparatus of young Latinos that you have ever seen in the history of the U.S. So what I see is like young people armed and fully standing in their power, taking on corporations, taking on power and being locally elected in places like Arizona, like Colorado, like Nevada, like Florida, like my home state of Texas. And I see, to be honest, like my ability to be able to be of service to Black women and Black leadership so that when we know that they're free, all of us are free. We know that it will be a measuring stick when it comes to 2022 and the 2024 elections. And we're like really focused on building political power. But we know that our aspirations and our vision for this country are bigger and wider than citizenship. And we're ready to take it by storm.
Graysa Martinez Rosas, I am so grateful that you joined us on my little Nuestro pod to tell your story, to lift up the voices, to be seen. Thank you, sister, for being here.
Gracias, Chuck. Such an honor.
You can visit our show notes to learn more about Grace's work. Special hat tip to all of those undocumented youth out there that are just kicking ass and taking names. We lift you up and we see you.
Nuestro is a production of Solidarity Strategies. Gabrielle Horton is our executive producer. Cynthia Pimentel is our lead producer. And Kevin Liu is our sound engineer. Our theme music is composed by Joel Rodriguez.
I want to take a minute and thank all of you for subscribing and listening to the podcast. We come out every Wednesday, and we could not do this show without you. Thank you so much. And we'll all see you on the backside.